Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
These people who are going nuts, screaming at the Supreme Court, pounding on the doors, and doing the same thing at colleges, what happens on campus is not going to stay on campus. It is going to infect the mainstream of our politics.
Most school boards are not responsive to parents any longer, so it's not the same public school. And the game changer really has been just this promotion of the LGBT culture.
When is grace ever not radical? So why do you need to qualify it with the word radical? What's the itch you're trying to scratch here?
These forms of worship come with an inherent enthusiastic theology that is diametrically opposed to the sacraments and the means of grace.
I'm a harpist in Arkansas, and I love Issues, Etc.
The headline from the New York Times several days ago reads, "Transgender could be defined out of existence under Trump administration." It's speaking about an attempt on the part of the Trump administration to more carefully define gender as a biological immutable condition determined by, well, how you're born, determined by whether or not you have Y or X chromosomes. But it's being called by the New York Times a rollback of the recognition and the protections of transgender people. So it wasn't that long ago that Title IX just meant men and women. When it talked about gender discrimination, it was simply talking about men or women. Now, recently, that changed. Title IX was modified. The Trump administration wants to change it back to what it was before, what it had been all along, how the lawmakers who passed the law understood the word gender. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, October the 24th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about the Trump administration's attempt to clarify gender under Title IX. Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation will be our guest here in the first half hour. A little bit later, Pastor Tom Baker joins us to teach a Sunday school lesson. We'll talk about the children of Israel crossing the Red Sea in Exodus chapters 13 through 15. Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will be with us after that. We're going to talk about a story of depression and the pastoral office. And then Dr. Christian Teves joins us for Issues Etc. Reformation Week. Our theme is Paths to Lutheranism today, from agnosticism to Lutheranism. Dr. Teves has written a column for the Issues Etc. journal titled The Wisdom of God. Joining us to discuss the Trump administration's attempt to clarify gender under Title IX, Dr. Ryan Anderson. He's a regular guest. He's William E. Simon Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, author of several books, including Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom, and his latest, When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. Dr. Anderson, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Both sides are claiming science here, the Trump administration and those who are criticizing this as what they call a rollback of recognition and protections for transgender people. Who really owns the science here?
Well, on this question, it's the people in the Trump administration. In the very last months of the Obama administration, federal bureaucrats, they unlawfully and unilaterally redefined the word sex in our nation's civil rights laws to mean gender identity. And then they imposed a radical bathroom and locker room policy in all of our schools. And then they said that all surgeons who perform double mastectomies in the case of cancer would have to perform them in the case of sex reassignment procedures. All endocrinologists who do testosterone therapy in the case of low testosterone would have to do it for sex reassignment purposes. And all the Trump administration, based upon this New York Times report that came out over the weekend, all the Trump administration is doing is going back to where things were in the last months of the Obama administration, to the way they had been all throughout all prior American history, and the way in which a federal judge said that the law couldn't be changed unless Congress changed it. So they're abiding by a judge's decision that struck down the Obama era guidance, they're saying that the word sex refers to the biological, physiological reality of how our bodies are organized with respect to sexual reproduction. The reason that there's a sexual binary, there are two sexes, is because there's a male way of being sexually organized and a female way of being sexually organized. And they're saying that that's what Congress meant in 1972 when they passed this law. That's what everyone understood it to mean. And that the very concept of transgender suggests someone whose gender identity is different than their biological sex. But that's not what the law in this context has codified. The law codifies the word sex, not the word gender or gender identity.
How do you account for, I think it's a feigned amnesia on the part mostly of the popularizers of this notion. Like you said, until 15 minutes ago, this was the common definition of sex. It was a binary. It was changed very recently. But if you listen to those who are criticizing this move on the part of the Trump administration, you would think that we have always defined gender as a personal decision, completely disconnected from any biological or genetic factors.
So they're being opportunistic here. What's really interesting, and one of the things that I document in When Harry Became Sally, is how a decade ago, LGBT activists and the various advocacy groups would admit that there was a distinction between sex and gender identity, and that the very concept of transgender meant a biological male who identifies as a woman, a biological female who identifies as a man. And within the past several years, they've shifted arguments, and they're now saying that a transgender woman is a woman, not a man who identifies as a woman, but is ontologically, metaphysically, the gender identity they claim determines the sex of the individual. And so in the book, I quote medical doctors and lawyers and others who have testified in court saying that from a medical perspective, the appropriate determination of sex is gender identity. And this is just astounding because we don't say that for any other animal. We can identify and determine the sex across the animal kingdom based on how organisms are organized with respect to sexual reproduction. And it was particularly astounding because she went further and she said it's counter to medical science to use chromosomes, hormones, internal reproductive organs, external genitalia, or secondary sex characteristics to override gender identity. And I just thought that that's so astounding because that's the bread and butter of medical science, right? Those are the objective facts of reality. And this doctor was claiming that subjective identity trumps objective reality when it comes to classifying someone as male or female.
Does this present a political, even perhaps a fundamentally logical problem for the libertine left? Because it's kind of having your cake and eating it too. There are times when the rhetoric of the left is very strongly binary, when they talk about women's rights, a woman's right to choose, when they have a woman's march, or even replacing a woman justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. We need to keep that a constant there. And then 2 or 3 minutes later, they can talk about the whole concept of woman being flexible and subjective.
So the most interesting debates to watch on the progressive side of the political spectrum are the debates between the feminists and the transgender activists. Because the feminists argue, feeling like a woman doesn't make you a woman. Identifying as a woman doesn't make you a woman. And that much of the transgender ideology is simply buying into and codifying sex stereotypes. So that when Bruce becomes Caitlin, what Caitlin is now doing is highlighting all of the standard sex stereotypes about what women are like, right? So women are just lipstick and nail polish and high heels and cleavage. And so many feminists, when Caitlin became Woman of the Year, they were like, no, this is a step in the wrong direction. And so trans activists have labeled them with an acronym, TERF. It's a slur from the perspective of the feminists because it stands for trans-exclusionary radical feminists. But you're right, there is a logical problem here. Feeling like a woman, identifying like a woman, doesn't make someone a woman. And many of the feminists who have fought to break down some of the barriers for women, some of the stereotypes that were restrictive of kind of female interests or personalities or occupations, vocations, they're now very concerned that the transgender ideology is actually reinforcing those stereotypes. It's built upon those stereotypes, that if you're a boy who likes Barbie in the color pink, that might mean you're a girl trapped in a boy's body.
How does that resolve itself, that conflict between feminism and transgender activists? Do you anticipate it going the same way that homosexual activism has? And because up until recently, as you just pointed out, homosexual activism depended upon a binary definition of gender in order to even identify as same-sex attracted.
Yeah, so it's not clear how it's going to work itself out. I mean, this will be very interesting to watch, because it'll reveal to us kind of what the pecking order is in terms of protected classes, or in terms of like identity politics. You know, which identity is ranked higher on the totem pole? And what I mean by that is, there was a viral YouTube video maybe from a year or two ago that said that you're transphobic if you have genital preferences. So that if you're a lesbian that's only attracted to women without male genitals, that makes you transphobic. That a woman could have male genitalia, that's a trans woman, and if you won't date or be romantically involved with that person, then you're transphobic. And the lesbian said, wait a minute, the whole point about being a lesbian is that we're not attracted to people with male genitals. And so there's a tension here when even the L and the T start fighting with each other within that political constituency. But a lot is at stake here with female equality for athletics. The reason we have separate athletic competitions for men and for women is the differences in male and female bodies. And so just last week, a world record was set in female cycling by a male who identifies as a woman. So the second place finisher and the third place finisher, they were standing on lower rungs on that finisher's platform. The person standing on the highest rung, the number one finisher, is a male philosophy professor who identifies as a woman. This is more serious when it comes to contact sports. There was a mixed martial arts competition from 3 years ago where a male identifying as a woman beat the opponent and gave her a concussion and fractured her eye socket in the process. So there are concerns there about equality, safety concerns, both the physical safety of within athletic competitions, but then also safety in bathrooms and locker rooms and showers, privacy within bathrooms and locker rooms and showers, and then also liberty concerns. As I mentioned, the New York Times story was about a regulation from the Department of Health and Human Services that would have, it was like the contraception mandate from Obamacare, but literally on steroids. This would have required hormonal therapy, surgical therapy, to be covered by all health care plans and to be performed by all relevant physicians. So that if you would do it when it's medically necessary, for example, cancer, you couldn't decline to do it when you thought it was medically unnecessary, for example, sex reassignment.
A couple questions here. Depending on what survey you look at or what poll you look at, the transgender population in the United States is as little as 0.6%. Some others identify 6.8%. That's a pretty enormous range there. But just going for the middle there and just saying maybe, let's generously say 2% of the population, somewhere in that neighborhood. How do you explain that small of a minority speaking with that loud of a voice legally, as in the Obama administration?
So I don't think this is so much that part of the population who identifies as transgender, so much as it is activists, particularly activists who have bought into intersectionality. One of the things that I've been struck by are the number of people who have transitioned, who identify as transgender, who say they want nothing to do with the professional LGBT groups, who say they just want to be able to live their lives in peace. Many of them will even say, I know I'm not a woman, but I didn't feel comfortable in my own body, and transitioning was the only way I could cope with that. You know, I know that doesn't actually reassign my sex. It doesn't actually make me a woman, but living as if a woman was the best I could hope for, right? And these people are in a tragic situation. They're suffering in their own bodies to such a great degree that many of them think this is their best hope in life. And so my concern isn't so much with people who are suffering in this way, it's with the activists and with the ideologues and with the people with political power who are trying to impose this on the entire nation and trying to coerce people who think differently. And I think that is largely a result of power politics. The LGBT movement was very successful on what they called marriage equality. In June of 2015, the Supreme Court redefined marriage everywhere. They had 1 year left in the Obama administration. And I think many of the bureaucrats in the Obama administration had never really thought what the T means, what it stands for, what it requires. And they just said, look, we're good allies. We were a good ally on the LGB part of the acronym. We're a good ally on gay rights, lesbian rights, marriage equality. Now we're going to be good on transgender equality and trans rights. And so in those last months of the Obama years, they pushed all this out. And I think most Americans don't even know that this means 9-year-old kids are being placed on puberty-blocking drugs, that 12-year-old girls are having double mastectomies performed on them. And that as Americans learn more about what's happening in this transgender moment, more Americans who were in favor of gay marriage and in favor of gay rights will have second thoughts about the T, and will see that this acronym doesn't hang together as seamlessly as they once thought.
Before we let you go, Dr. Anderson, what can you tell us about your presentation at the upcoming Making the Case conference? You'll be making the case for our first Freedoms next month in Dallas.
Sure, I'm really looking forward to it. I've been on the radio show before, but we've never been able to get the scheduling to work out for the conference. And I'm going to be talking about how religious liberty and some of the other First Amendment freedoms, they kind of hang together, that there's an ecosystem of liberty, and that what they're meant, these various natural rights that we have, they're meant to respect aspects of human dignity, the dignity of the human person to be free to live according to their conscience, to their deepest beliefs, especially beliefs about God, and therefore they're meant to promote human flourishing, that freedom is intricately connected to truth, and that living in accordance with the truth is how we flourish. So that'll be part of the case there, and then we'll talk about what to do when we disagree about the truth, right? We live in a pluralistic society, and how do we handle that pluralism, that diversity, that disagreement, especially on controversial issues like abortion, contraception, about gay marriage, about sex reassignment procedures, and how do we peacefully coexist in the midst of this disagreement?
You can meet and hear Dr. Ryan Anderson at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Don't wait to register. Attendance is limited to 400. Thanks to Wittenberg Academy, childcare is free. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Dr. Ryan Anderson is William E. Simon, Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation and author of several books, including Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom, and his latest, When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. Dr. Anderson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pastor Tom Baker is with us on the other side of the break. We will be teaching a Sunday school lesson as we do every week. This week, Exodus 13 through 15, The Crossing of the Red Sea. Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a contribution of $120 to Issues Etc. You can donate online at issuesetc.org/scholarship, or you can make your $120 check payable to Issues Etc., write scholarship in the memo line, and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we are committed to our Lutheran confession and heritage. Please encourage the student in your life to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. This child, Jesus Christ, is the focus of every Christmas card that Emmanuel Press offers. Whether in stained glass, illumination, or classic works of art, Christmas cards from Emmanuel Press joyfully confess our Savior's birth with the words of Scripture and the poetry of hymns. Visit their website at emmanuelpress.us to create a custom assortment of cards. EmmanuelPress.us.